Noel Thomas is on the Wholehearted Leader podcast today. Noel is with Dark Watch, and I'm honored to bring you a phenomenal conversation. Noel and I met just a couple of weeks ago at the Lion's Den Venture Capitalist project. And so Noel is going to dive into all the things that I don't understand, but with a proper introduction, let me just give you an idea of who Noel is here and why you need to listen to a few moments of our conversation. So Noel Thomas's first exposure to the problem of human trafficking was atypical. In 2007, Noel was touring internationally with his rock band when someone passed him a flyer raising awareness about human trafficking. The reality of people in the bondage of modern-day slavery had a profound impact on Noel. This moment became the genesis of Noel's fight against human trafficking. While in India researching human trafficking brothels, he witnessed law enforcement facilitate the sale of a little girl. That moment solidifies Noel's journey to fight human trafficking. While he is still an avid bass guitarist, Noel went on to found a nonprofit raising awareness about human trafficking in the United States. His work in the community led to his appointment as a statewide anti-trafficking coordinator for Florida's Department of Children and Families. And Noel, you've gone on to done to amazing things in a short amount of time, just with the interwebs and technology. So Noel, I'm honored that you're here, and we're going to dive into more of your story and why it's important for us today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on the show, Lance.
Yeah, when I met you a couple of weeks ago and just heard about what Dark Watch was up to, it definitely resonated deep in my core. One, having four girls, right, between the ages of almost 14 down to 8, and for over probably a decade or 12 years, I've been really aware about sex trafficking, human trafficking, and different organizations out there. But when I heard your presentation, it really made me realize that we're still at the tip of the iceberg of really what's truly going on, and the darkness that prevails in our culture and our society around this issue. So let's get into that in just a moment. But you said when we met that you had been recently married, not even a year yet. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So the first question here, for all the longtime listeners already know, but what was you and Liz Marie last date, and what in particular does that say about your leadership?
Interesting. So we went out on a date to go to a film festival where we watched a bunch of indie films and local movies. And I'm not exactly sure what it says about my leadership other than creativity and fun is part of the process of working at Dark Watch and also with our family. Those are our high priorities. But that was an incredible date. We've done this 3 years in a row that we go to this film festival, and for 2 days it's just all about these indie films.
Love it. Love it. Creativity and fun. I hope in 2 or 3 or 4 decades from now, I can ask you the same question, because it just seems like people that are far ahead of us in this game, right? I'm going on 20 years of marriage, but people that are far ahead of us, creativity and play and fun and adventure are the cornerstone of some of the most successful marriages and guys that I've talked to on this podcast. So kudos to you. Almost a year. So hopefully y'all can finish strong here in the next 6 weeks or so. So let's get into a little bit of Dark Watch, the stats around it, and even a little bit more about the Genesis story. Could you even take us back a little bit further to some of that context that you shared when we were at the Lion's Den conference together?
Yeah, so absolutely. This passion for Dark Watch started when I was a child, and our family's walking in a flea market. My dad gets bumped by a lady. She makes small talk conversation with him, and when he looks down, my sister's gone. And thankfully, he trusts trusted the instincts to run towards the exit. And he got to that exit, and you know, a man that we didn't know was walking out the door with my sister. So that leaves a deep impression on you throughout the course of your life. And then, as you mentioned, we went on tour with the rock and roll band. I get this flyer on human trafficking. It starts to sink into my heart. I want to know, you know, what is this issue of human trafficking? What does it look like? What are the problems? And I went to India and saw it firsthand, where this little 14-year-old girl was being trafficked, you know, in this public square right above a law enforcement agency. And really, she had no one to turn to. Her parents probably, you know, possibly sold her into slavery. And now you would think that law enforcement would be someone you could call if you were in trouble. They were facilitating traffic and the deal itself. And so the quote by Edmund Burke struck me, that all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And at the time, all I had was a platform with the band. And we use that every show to talk about how there is, you know, 50 million people that are enslaved, that it's over $150 billion illicit industry that fuels cartels and terrorists. And we used that platform, and from that platform went into the nonprofit space. And then from the nonprofit space, worked as a statewide anti-trafficking coordinator, where I went out on a raid. And when we went out on this raid, you know, they were collecting the information manually, looking online. They were looking on sites that at the time were called Backpage, these advertising sites of these women that were being trafficked. And I thought, you know, hey, there's got to be a better way to do this. And that was what started the onus of this company, this for-profit idea with a bold mission to eradicate human trafficking globally and break down the business of modern day slavery.
That's absolutely incredible. Will you kind of, like, in the most simple terms, so kind of everybody kind of has a bigger picture of what's going on, of what Dark Watch is, so we don't get too granular into to everything. So in the most simple terms, how do you explain what Dark Watch really is?
Yeah, so we go out over the internet and dark web, and we collect information on human traffickers. They're very loud online. You know, they have to solicit customers, and then people that purchase these services in the sex trafficking space are writing reviews right out there in the open. And so this creates an incredible opportunity for us to look at that data and provide it to partners that can actually do something about it, whether that's law enforcement or the financial industry. They can take that information and action it based on what we've collected. And the vision of this is to start breaking down the enterprise of trafficking, one, because it is so lucrative and continues to fuel the exploitation, but two, there's so many industries that are impacted by human trafficking that maybe knowingly or unknowingly facilitated everything from airlines to banks to rental cars and everything in between. And the idea is to give them a tool and a technology that they can keep these traffickers out of their business, but subsequently will also make it very hard for these traffickers to conduct their business.
So you're really overlapping data of where money is being transacted and things that are openly on the interwebs. You're actually trying to pull this data together and make a story out of it and actually begin to track down where these people, where these individuals are, not only those caught in sex trafficking, human trafficking, but those ultimately running the business of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and it's really the facilitators of this business that we want to get after, because they've been able to operate with impunity, you know, with no one really looking at them. They often operate in plain sight in our communities, in these illicit establishments and that sort of thing. And so we want to make the doing business of trafficking a lot harder and raise that bar, so maybe they'll move on to coupon fraud or, you know, some other some other scam other than exploiting human beings.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that really got me intrigued around this and y'all's presentation was how your story was about the Red Roof Inn and Chase Bank in particular in the North Dallas, the DFW Metroplex area, and the intersection of just watching where the money is going and how we can begin to stop some of these endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, why to some degree have we not paid more attention up to this point about the simple fact you just follow the money?
Right, exactly. I think it's a complex answer, you know, as to why we haven't been able to stop something that's operating in plain sight. Part of it is a lack of know-how. Part of it is a lack of awareness. Part of it is turning a blind eye. And, you know, to that point, one anecdotal story, we were talking to a large dating company and we said, hey, we've got this data that would be really helpful to your platform to keep bad actors off. And the vice president of that company said, well, prostitutes need love too. And we were just blown away that was the mindset of the market. Well, litigators have brought these cases against companies like that look the other way and, you know, said, oh, not our problem. Why would we ever be held liable? So, you know, the banks are paying out major settlements. Hotels are paying out major settlements. Fashion brands, you know, we're starting to see this with P. Diddy and individuals being sued personally under these lawsuits. And these lawsuits are changing the mindset of, you know, maybe cold-hearted businessmen that are saying, hey, you know, we need to look at this problem. You know, it's A, the right thing to do, but B, economically, this could be disastrous to us in litigation and reputation loss for having human trafficking occurring in our business.
Sure. Will you share some about like how you gained your own awareness of like you've got to turn this into a business endeavor from the nonprofit endeavor side of things, and the reason like our connection through the Lion Den and venture capitalists, and like why what you're working on is such a large scale project and why it's so important to have the economic engine behind what you're up to?
That's a great question. And it's like, you know, we want this vision to live beyond us. And the challenge that I found working in the nonprofit sector and doing this was, yes, we raised a lot of awareness and we were able to go all these places around the world to talk about human trafficking. But, you know, 80% of my time was out there trying to raise more funds, and we never got down to the actual operations of it. And in the same way, you know, the inefficiency of fighting trafficking got us into creating this technology. It was the inefficiency of the nonprofit model that I thought this isn't sustainable. We're not going to be able to break down a $150 billion illicit industry. You know, if most of my time is out there trying to raise more money to keep awareness going. And there's a lot of incredible nonprofits that are out there. There's work that only nonprofits can do when it comes to the rehabilitation of these individuals once they're brought out from a raid. But when it comes to creating, you know, a scalable technology and solution, that can only be done in a for-profit environment. And the idea is that this creates enough value to our partners that it sustains itself for over 100 years. You know, I'm hoping that my grandchildren will be, you know, using dark watch technology or promoting it, and that there will be, you know, literally tens of thousands of businesses that are sharing information and that are dark watch certified. So that's kind of the vision of why we decided for a for-profit model. And what's really interesting is now we're starting to see venture capital take interest in this idea of redemptive capital with a double bottom line. You know, we can do well by doing good, and we can create systems by leveraging capitalism 2.0 to sustain these, you know, things for more than a lifetime.
So good. Capitalism 2.0 and redemptive financing. That's some powerful language. So So Darkwatch is a B2B platform. So help us understand, like, if I'm a large business owner, mm-hmm. like how this technology begins to work and like what the business model is really behind fighting sex trafficking and human trafficking.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of risks that businesses don't realize that they have. So the obvious, like if you're a bank, is that you can cross-check your bank accounts against our database of traffickers. And when there's a match, you can decide, all right, we want to end the banking relationship. We want to monitor them. We want to, you know, report this. So there's a lot of flexibility that you have to cross-check your accounts. But the risk extends well beyond just account holders, and it really extends to every business. So you've got the insider threat angle. You know, when you do a background check, the background check is not necessarily saying, hey, this person is suspected of human trafficking or has been involved in this type of exploitation. So if they've never been caught and prosecuted, you know, you may not garner some of that information. So you've got businesses have an inherent insider risk. The other thing is that they oftentimes haven't created internal policies and procedures. And like a disaster plan or a cyber breach, there needs to be a plan for, hey, if we have a case of human trafficking, either it's our staff or it accidentally happens on our property or, you know, is in our purview of responsibility, what do we do next? And the plausible deniability of like, oh, this isn't our problem, no longer works. You have to have a solid plan. And that's where every business, you know, it doesn't matter what business you're in, manufacturing, you know, hospitality, you need this type of training and policies and procedures. And that's where we help, is we craft a response plan in this emergency scenario. And the third way is that your downstream suppliers. So there's more regulation that's starting to come out requiring businesses to look at their downstream suppliers to make sure that there isn't forced labor in the supply chain. And if you're over a certain threshold, you can get fined from the federal government or internationally governments. And so this due diligence on supply chains and forced labor in the supply chain is another way that every business, it doesn't matter what you're in, can be helpful in fighting this. So we've built a certification process around this. It contemplates what industry the business is in, what geography, if they're in a human trafficking corridor, do they have people, policies, or procedures? And we give them that certification, and each year we help audit their processes and technology to make sure that they're bringing down their risk score and staying certified. And then they can tell their community that they're DarkWatch certified and doing everything that the market has to eliminate human trafficking from the supply chain, to the workers, to the accounts that they hold. They've got the latest and greatest technology. So that's kind of a broad scale of how we're attacking this risk problem for really any business.
So is the certification the only way to partner with DarkWatch? Like, that's y'all's primary, like, hey, if I want to be a DarkWatch certified business, like, is that how they tap into your platform?
The easiest way is actually for us to offer a free assessment. Okay. So, you know, we'll work with a business and we'll see kind of what their risk exposure is. They could then use the DarkWatch technology, but not every business needs the DarkWatch technology itself. They might just need some basic training and policies and procedures. You gotcha. Know, a photography business is going to be much lower risk than a regional border state bank. And yeah, and we can help wherever kind of they are on the risk spectrum get the right solution that they need.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. That's good clarifying, because you're not only just working with large institutions, you're actually trying to raise awareness for the small business owners on Main Street, right?
That's it.
That is actually going on in our own neighborhoods. And I don't know how much time we have to go into those nuances. You shared at the Lion's Den some of your current partners, and I don't want to misspeak. But would you share some of those current partners that you're proud of that are already partnering with you, not necessarily on the venture capital side yet, but those larger institutions that said, hey, like this is important and we want your technology in-house with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've worked with Wells Fargo. We've worked with Homeland Security in the past. Everything ranging from local law enforcement to large Fortune 100 companies. We've provided them with training and data to help them mitigate their risk exposure. And I think the interesting thing for, every business is the quality of the information that we can provide them on these bad actors. Our team consists of ex-intelligence members and data scientists. And so we are really able to provide a useful amount of actionable information for these companies and governments to actually move on and do something about it.
Incredible. On the venture capitalist side, what are you proud of? How much money you all raised, and who are those partners there?
Yeah, so we're really excited. We've partnered with Eagle Venture Fund out of Dallas and His Kingdom Resources. We've raised a few million over the last few years to get after this problem set and bring these solutions forward. And we're drawing a lot of excitement as we get ready to scale this, ideally globally, this technology and methods.
Yeah. So for the people that like hear this and like understand, okay, I hear the technology side of it, I hear the business side of it. Maybe just for a moment, let's talk about some of the nuances, like with just the average person, right? That maybe they're not a small business owner, maybe they're not the president of a bank who can tap into all the things that you're saying. How do we raise our own awareness of these things that are going on in North America in suburban neighborhoods, and what do we actually begin to do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we say that it starts with a conversation. For us, it's for me personally, it started with a conversation. Someone gave me a flyer on human trafficking, and it changed the entire trajectory of my life. The same thing is true is that, we may have people that are listening to this that work in an industry, one of the 30 industries that are impacted by human trafficking. And so making sure do you have the policies and procedures and training in place within your company? Has your company done everything possible to try and eliminate that risk of human trafficking? Or if you're not working in the marketplace, what can you do in your community? Is hey, we've got these illicit establishments almost on every street corner. We need to set up ordinances, and we need to start shutting these places down. And as a community, pushing bad actors and human trafficking out of our community, and even on a more micro level in the home, right, is that we need to talk to our children about the risk of online safety, and that video games and these chat-based tools online serve as a tool for exploiters. And really, these kids need to know that they have a safe place. If they ever come across something or see something, that there's a safe place within the family that they can discuss it, because we're seeing, unfortunately, so many of these teens that are taking their life because of the shame that organized crime has exploited them through these gaming apps and social media platforms. And they feel like there's nothing they can do. And so, again, going back to that conversation and having a crucial conversation with our children, we can create a safe space for them to come forward if they see something, or the friends see something, and then we can respond in a place of love and protection. The other thing is as we're talking to other men, pornography is a huge driver of this, and these illicit massage establishments are directly tied to labor trafficking. And a lot of this is awareness. I don't think as any man is out there, hopefully not knowingly, supporting human trafficking, but downstream, the activities and the choices that we make has a real impact on fueling these industries. And so having the conversation with other men, not a shame base, but a free environment to really help and lift them out, to provide accountability and options for them. And that's where I think, you know, we really start to hit the demand side of this. It's like, if there wasn't a demand, such great demand, there wouldn't be a $150 billion industry, a lot of it coming from sex trafficking and exploitation. And so we are ourselves have to not be exploiters, and we have to equip other men to not be exploiters in this process by arming them with the knowledge and love and support to do that.
You're more well, Noel, about the actual stats that are taking place. And sometimes, like, we don't need more data, like, right? We actually just need to, like, change our behavior, just like you mentioned, like, just do something. But what are some of the current stats that are actually taking place?
Yeah, so 50 million people enslaved around the world. It's a combination between sex trafficking, labor trafficking, and organ trafficking broadly. There's more nuanced types of trafficking that are starting to occur. Romance scams online, sextortion, sports trafficking, where individuals are labor trafficked into sports. And they're trying to get more statistics and data around these kind of subcategories. But for the sake of general purposes, there's about 50 million people enslaved around the world. And I think the latest stat is it was $150 billion industry. I think it's $220 billion. But the main thing that we look at is each year it's growing. It's the number is not going down. The number is going exponentially up. And that's where we have to take a hard look at ourselves as a counter-trafficking movement, as a society, as a world of, you know, is this what we want our future to be? Which side of history do we want to be on when it comes to this issue of human trafficking? And that's why we think, you know, Dark Watch is one of hopefully many solutions that starts to change the curve of trafficking. And ideally, we put ourselves out of business because, you know, we're solving this. And it's kind of the one industry we hope that there is a lot more competition, that there's more businesses that are bringing, you know, actual solutions to the fight against modern day slavery, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to disrupt trafficking at scale and change the tides here.
So I'm trying to, like, put the pieces together in a way that makes sense for my brain and the listeners. So I'm just coming off of a 3-day, 4-day conference, stayed at a hotel, right? Had some travel involved.
Mm-hmm.
To some degree, Dark Watch is looking to be a player in this space to varying degrees, but this is one that I understand. I'm like, hey, this is a local hotel that is certified on y'all's platform that is fighting human and sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is an airline that's certified, that's cross-checking data and technology where the money's actually moving on the Dark Watch platform. And then I can be a faithful steward of what God has entrusted to me and make responsible choices to participate not only with major airlines and major hotels, but also my local organizations of saying, oh, like, they're aware, they're taking action, and they're doing their small part mm-hmm. in this huge global problem.
That's it. Yeah. And that's kind of the key is, you know, is that everyone can lend a hand to this. It's like, you know, I was a bassist in a band and now running a global tech company to fight this, and not everyone is going to have that same story, right? But everyone does have a sphere of influence, whether it's, you know, your spouse and kids, great, you know, the future generation, we want to equip them to be warriors and protectors to fight against this, or you have a platform in your business or a social media platform, right? You have a platform and an opportunity to fight back against human trafficking and stem the tides. And there's really no amount of effort that's too small in this fight.
I don't know if there's names that you can say, like, publicly. If we have a regional bank or even a national bank that people could already begin to join, or local brands, hotels like that are already kind of like plugged into this? Can you make those recommendations at this point? And or if not, like any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's the next phase of Dark Watch is exactly that, is kind of equipping consumers with that choice. But in the meantime, you can check like when you're staying at a hotel, do they have visible signs of how to report human trafficking or how to know the signs? Most hotels are required to have that, and that's a step in the right direction. There's a lot more that needs to be done, but that's at least a step in the right direction. The other thing is that we use, you know, online review platforms to show us, you know, what's going on. And a lot of times when a business is looking the other way, you can go on Yelp and you could see, you know, some of these hotels that were sued. You can actually search that address, you know, look at the reviews, and they'll say, hey, human trafficking has been occurring at this hotel. Someone needs to do something about it. And so with a little bit of research, and ideally we want to make that process a lot easier with DarkWatch. But in the meantime, until this technology comes to market, there are some basic things that you can do to make sure that you're not supporting it.
Okay. But let's turn like maybe the last part of this conversation towards like why redemptive financing and capital 2.0, this kingdom-based endeavors, right? The faith-driven entrepreneur and wholehearted leaders, why this has become so important, not only in your space, but in many other spaces as well. Why is this so important, and what do we need to do as business owners, entrepreneurs? So how would you begin to speak into that?
Yeah, I think from a broad level, the way that we think about it is, you know, we have to think differently about the impact that we're leaving on this world. And I often use the example of like the reusable rocket. We never would have created a reusable rocket by donating to a charity. It just never would happen. We have to create industry that's properly incentivized to solving these massive global or intergalactic problems that we're facing as a society. And I think that, you know, we need other people talking about this idea of capitalism 2.0 and how to use redemptive capitalism to solve tough problems and making the incentives right for everyone in the process. You know, Charlie Munger talked a lot about getting incentives right and how it's such a powerful lever when you get those incentives of capitalism right in the market. So I think that's part of it. And two, as businesses, is how can we latch on to this next wave of impact-led companies that have double bottom lines, you know, either shepherding this next phase in through mentorship or directly supporting them with investments or long-term partnerships, you know, as well. I think that we're going to see this when it comes to clean water issues, energy conservation and usage. We're going to see this solving hunger, right? Is like, it's going to be entrepreneurs that have this capitalism 2.0 mindset that are going to be able to solve these problems at scale. And I think our conversation just has to change around what that looks like and how we can support each other in that and support new and fresh ideas. I say, you know, a lot of the challenge has been up until this point is convincing everyone why we chose the for-profit model and not the nonprofit model. And, you know, you get a lot of people that are like, we only want to give or we only want to invest. And the thought with redemptive capital is why not do both and create a system that continues on? The last part about this is like our life is so finite. We are a mist here on this earth, and we get a very small opportunity to push back against evil or leave the world a little bit better place or actually impact the kingdom. And I think it's so easy for us as entrepreneurs and businessmen to get so focused on the economics and the bottom line that we lose the eternal
purpose and perspective through the trees. And the beautiful thing is it doesn't have to be an either or scenario. You know, we can do both. And so that's what I love about this redemptive capital and what the guys at Eagle and Faith Driven Investors are doing is they're using this redemptive capital in such powerful ways that are solving these problems and changing the entire paradigm of how we've really thought about our impact on Earth.
So Noel, maybe just two questions. One would be, what's next for Dark Watch, and like, how do people like partner with you in what's next?
Yeah, absolutely. So the certification process, we're going to start rolling this out. We've been providing assessments to businesses to help them identify their risks. So we always say, you know, hey, if you've got a business that wants to pilot this and connect with us, we can help them or you in this process. And we've made it really attainable for anyone to easily, you know, lower the risk and kind of join in. And I think the future state of Dark Watch is, you know, that collectively we'll decide where to put our resources when we go to stay at a hotel and when we go to rent a car, and that we're going to want to work, whether it's Dark Watch or another company, with the companies that have done everything they can to fight human trafficking. And as you know, a family, it's like, we're only going to stay at hotels that are, one, going to keep our family safe, but are committed to the fight against trafficking. And I think that's the future state of where this is making more conscious and informed decisions of where we spend our resources.
Noel, thanks for your time. And as a newly married, growing family man, I anticipate, here's the last question. And man, I'm just honored to lock arms with you. And granted, I'm not an venture capitalist. I don't have millions of dollars sitting in my bank account, but I am just cheering y'all on. I'm super pumped for the future of Dark Watch and watching this grow. But even to some more seemingly more important, and you kind of pointed at it, just that eternal kingdom perspective, right? Mm-hmm. We fast forward at some date in the future. Who do you want to say that you've become at that date in the future? What does that becoming journey look like for you?
Yeah, it's actually the last breath on this planet, you know, in that moment where I cross over and it's well done, good and faithful servant. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I want to work back from is that peace when I transition into eternity, is to know that I used everything that I had at my disposal to impact the kingdom. And along that journey is definitely inspiring as many people as possible to use their talents and passions and creativity and fun in ways to impact the kingdom, and how we all are giving a very specific and unique set of skills and task on earth to do, and to not squander that, to take that seriously, that we are stewards of that time and those resources, and to use them for this type of eternal impact.
Thank you, Noel. Will you tell us where people can find you and Dark Watch and how to contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you'd like, you can check out darkwatch.io. You can also check out a book that I just released called Dark Traffic. Whitaker House is putting that out. It's available for pre-order on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you'd like to contact me, you can contact us through the darkwatch.io, and we'll get connected with you and get you plugged in.
Outstanding. Well, thanks, brother.
Yes, thank you as well.
Thank you, friends, for being here today. My name is Lance Howard, business coach and leadership development for high-level faith-driven leaders. My goal is your flourishing. And my approach to developing executive leaders integrates the maximization of hope, gaining an outside perspective, devising practical strategies, and implementing measured discipline. This is all done with warm accountability aimed at achieving your desired outcomes. When you're making large financial decisions that impacts years of life, you need a trusted advisor to help guide you and to make a wise decision. What is executive business coaching? Effective coaching is pragmatic and outcome focused. It flows naturally according to your goals. It is conversational and rich with thought-provoking discussion. Picture it as a meaningful board meeting, an insightful chat with a close friend, a day of profound reflection, a session to recalibrate, and a stimulating brainstorming experience. It's both enjoyable and profound, tiring yet invigorating. Above all, it's having a trusted advisor right there beside you. My goal is your flourishing, to help you work less, earn more, and get back to what you love in life and in business. Now, when you're ready to have someone ride co-pilot with you on your leadership journey and business development, I would be honored to have a conversation with you to explore what it would look like for us to partner together for your flourishing. Peace and courage to you on your journey. I look forward to hearing from you soon.